12 electric motors mounted along the leading edge of a wing, each one spinning to push high-velocity air rearward across the surface. And the wing itself is less than half the size of the wing it was designed to replace. That is not a description of an aircraft with something wrong. That is a description of an aircraft built around a completely different assumption about how lift works and why you need so much of it. I'm Vector on Clear Direct, here on Radio Hangar. And if you have heard the name X-57 Maxwell but never really understood what made it interesting, today we are going to fix that, because the engineering story behind this airplane matters, not just for what it accomplished, but for what it taught everyone watching. And the ideas it explored are already showing up in the next generation of designs that intend to carry passengers. Before we get into the aerodynamics, a quick word from the folks supporting this segment. AviationSoul.com makes aviation challenge coins that mark the milestones that actually matter to pilots. First solo, private pilot certificate, instrument rating, CFI, beautifully made and built to last. AviationSoul.com. All right, let me start with the problem. The X-57 was built to solve. If you want to build a practical electric aircraft, the first wall you run into is energy density. Aviation gasoline carries roughly 12,000 watt-hours of energy per kilogram of fuel. The best lithium battery packs available today deliver somewhere in the range of 250 to 300 watt-hours per kilogram. That is 40 to 50 times less energy per unit weight. That gap is the fundamental reason why electric aircraft right now work well for trainers and short-duration operations and struggle badly when you need range or endurance. The batteries are heavy. And in aviation, weight is the enemy of everything. Engineers have been wrestling with this for years. And one of the approaches that emerged was not simply, how do we make better batteries, but how do we make the airframe so efficient that the batteries we already have become adequate? That reframe is where distributed electric propulsion enters the picture. Here is the core problem with conventional aircraft design. A wing is sized primarily for the low-speed regime. For takeoff and landing, where you need maximum lift at minimum speed. But at cruise altitude, that wing is generating more lift than the aircraft needs. More lift than necessary means more drag than necessary. The wing is, in engineering terms, oversized for the cruise mission. For most of aviation history, that was an accepted trade-off. You needed the big wing to get airborne, so you kept it. High lift systems like flaps and slats helped manage the low speed end, but they add mechanical complexity, weight, and failure modes. Electric motors change that equation. Small electric motors are light, they are efficient, and critically, they respond to commands in milliseconds. You can distribute a large number of them across an airframe without paying a prohibitive weight penalty. Here is the key idea behind high lift distributed electric propulsion. If you mount a row of small electric motors along the leading edge of a wing, each driving a propeller, they blow high-velocity air rearward across the upper wing surface. That accelerated airflow dramatically increases the effective lift coefficient of the wing at low speed. A wing that would otherwise stall at a given speed can now generate the lift it needs for takeoff and landing, even though it is substantially smaller than a conventional wing. Then, once airborne and accelerating toward cruise speed, those leading-edge propellers fold flat against the nacelle. They are no longer needed. In cruise, you are flying a smaller wing at high speed with significantly less drag than a conventional wing would produce. Less drag means less power to maintain altitude. Less power means less battery drain. More battery remaining means more range. The math starts working in your favor. NASA's Aeronautics Research Mission Directorate decided that the only way to know whether this concept actually delivered was to build an airplane and fly it. That aircraft became the X-57 Maxwell. The X designation matters. In the American military and NASA aircraft designation system, the X prefix means experimental. These are aircraft built specifically to explore new concepts, push boundaries, and generate data for the broader research community. The X-57 sits in a lineage that includes the X-1, the first aircraft to exceed the speed of sound, and the X-15, which flew to the edge of space. They are not production aircraft, they are flying laboratories. The point is knowledge, not revenue. The Maxwell name comes from James Clerk Maxwell, the Scottish mathematician and physicist who in the 19th century derived the equations governing electromagnetic fields. The same equations that underpin how every electric motor ever built actually works. For an electric aircraft research program, it is an appropriate name. Before the X-57, NASA funded an earlier concept demonstrator called the LEAP-TEC project. LEAP Tech stood for Leading Edge Asynchronous Propellers Technology. Rather than building a complete aircraft, the team mounted a small distributed propulsion wing on a truck and drove it down a runway surface at high speed. Instrumented runs that allowed them to gather aerodynamic data on the high lift concept before committing to a full aircraft. The truck tests confirmed the theoretical prediction. The leading edge motors did generate the expected lift augmentation. That gave the team enough confidence to move forward with a real airplane. For the X-57, NASA chose a Technam P-2006T as the baseline airframe. The Technam is an Italian light twin, a conventional, well-understood design. It has a standard wing, two conventional piston engines, straightforward systems throughout, a known quantity, which is exactly what you want when you're trying to isolate the variable you're actually testing. In this case, the propulsion system. The program planned to modify the Technam through a series of configurations called mods, each building on the previous one. Modification 2 was the starting point. The team replaced the two original piston engines with two electric motors driving conventional propellers, mounted in the same nacelle positions on the original wing. Same wing, same aerodynamics, different propulsion. The objective of Modification 2 was to validate the electric drivetrain in flight, the battery packs, the motor controllers, the thermal management of the motors under real-world load, getting all of it integrated into an airplane that actually flies. Modification 2 flew. The aircraft completed flight testing at Armstrong Flight Research Center at Edwards Air Force Base in California. The team gathered real flight data on the electric powertrain and established that the core systems operated as designed. That is not a trivial result. Getting a completely new propulsion architecture qualified for flight and then flying it safely is meaningful progress even before you get to exotic aerodynamics. The data from Modification 2 was also revealing about battery management in ways the team did not fully anticipate. They learned how the cells behaved under the high discharge demands of takeoff and climb versus the lower demand cruise phase. They refined the battery management software. They characterized how temperature affected both power output and available range under different conditions. Work that sounds unglamorous but is essential groundwork for any practical electric aircraft program. Modification 3 would have added the 12 leading-edge high-lift motors to the original Technam wing before committing to the smaller replacement wing. Prove the high-lift system works in flight, with real instrumented data before you build a wing that depends on it. Modification 4 was the final design goal, the configuration everybody was working toward. This version would have replaced the original Technam wing with a substantially smaller one, roughly 40% less wing area. That compact wing would have been aerodynamically undersized by conventional standards. Without powered lift from the leading edge motors, it simply could not generate enough force to get the airplane airborne at safe speeds. But with the leading edge motors spinning at full power during the takeoff roll, the wing would generate the lift it needed. The aircraft would climb out, accelerate, and at cruise altitude, the leading edge motors would fold flush. The two wingtip cruise motors would take over. In that configuration, the smaller wing would operate efficiently, with substantially less drag than the original Technam wing produced at cruise. The projected energy savings were significant, substantially less than the conventional configuration for the same mission. For an electric airplane, that kind of efficiency gain is the difference between a flight that works within current battery technology and one that does not. Now I have to be direct with you, because this segment is about real engineering and real outcomes. The X-57 program did not reach Modification 4. NASA formally wound down the program without flying the final configuration. That deserves context, not just acknowledgement. The program encountered a convergence of challenges that could not be resolved within the available budget and timeline. Battery qualification was a primary factor. The Modification 4 design required battery packs that could deliver high peak power during takeoff while meeting the weight budget of the smaller wing configuration. And that cleared NASA's safety and reliability standards. Getting cells with adequate energy density, packaging them into flight-qualified packs, and verifying thermal runaway containment was harder than initial projections suggested. Battery chemistry is not a clean engineering problem. It is partly a material science problem, partly a manufacturing problem, and partly a testing and qualification problem. All three gave the team difficulty. The control system complexity was another factor. Coordinating 12 leading-edge motors in real time, each needing to deliver the right thrust at the right moment to achieve proper lift distribution across the span, while also maintaining aircraft control authority, is a genuinely difficult problem. The failure modes mattered critically. What happens when one leading edge motor quits on the takeoff roll? The control laws had to handle it gracefully, without requiring unusual pilot action. Proving that the system was robust to realistic failure scenarios required extensive simulation and testing that the program ran out of time and budget to complete. When program leadership looked at what remained and what it would cost, and how long it would take, they made the decision to close the program and publish everything. The design data, the simulation results, the aerodynamic modeling, the modification to flight test data, all of it went into the public domain through NASA's technical report system. That decision, I would argue, was the right one. Not because incomplete programs deserve celebration, but because the knowledge was valuable and making it available was the responsible thing to do with it. Here is what the published data showed that matters. The aerodynamic modeling for the high-lift distributed propulsion concept held up. The predicted lift augmentation from the leading edge motors matched what wind tunnel testing and computational fluid dynamics models said it would be. The concept works. The physics are sound. The challenge is not whether distributed leading edge propulsion generates the predicted lift increase. The data says it does. The engineering challenge is building all the supporting systems reliably enough to build a certifiable aircraft around the concept. That distinction matters. An aerodynamic concept can be valid while the engineering implementation remains difficult. The X-57 established the validity. It did not complete the implementation, but establishing validity with real data rather than just theory is genuinely useful to the industry. And the industry has noticed. The distributed electric propulsion concept shows up explicitly in the design philosophy behind several of the serious eVTOL and regional electric programs currently in development. When you see aircraft designs that distribute many small propulsors across multiple locations, when you see designs that plan for different motor groups operating in different flight phases, you're seeing the practical application of principles. The X-57 was testing. The research gave those programs a validated aerodynamic foundation and a hard-won set of lessons about what makes the supporting systems difficult to build. The smaller wing with powered low-speed augmentation concept is specifically showing up in hybrid electric regional aircraft designs. Aircraft that use electric motors for high-power phases like takeoff and climb and combustion-based generators for cruise endurance. The wing can be optimized for cruise because the electric boost covers the low-speed regime. That design logic traces back to the same engineering argument the X-57 was built to test. Now, the honest picture on battery technology, because the timeline matters, current lithium pack assemblies at the full pack level, including structure, cooling, and battery management electronics, are generally in the range of 200 to 250 watt-hours per kilogram in practical implementations. The threshold number that keeps appearing in engineering discussions about short-haul regional electric aviation is around 400 watt-hours per kilogram at the pack level. That is when the economics start to look viable for routes under roughly 250 miles. Battery technology is improving. The rate has been running at roughly 5 to 8% per year at the cell level. That is meaningful progress. It is not a step change. Solid-state battery chemistry is frequently cited as the next major advance. It may be, but the gap between a laboratory demonstration cell and mass production at aerospace quality standards is significant, and that gap has surprised the industry before. The honest timeline, based on current trajectories, probably puts adequately capable battery technology for regional electric aviation in the 4 to 7 year range. Could be faster if solid-state chemistry delivers and manufacturing scales. Could be slower for the same reasons. What it is not is imminent. That matters for how you evaluate what you see in the electric aviation space. Companies designing aircraft for missions that genuinely work with today's batteries, short training flights, urban air mobility segments, short-range cargo, those companies are building towards something real. Companies projecting 200 miles of passenger range on technology that does not quite exist yet deserve more scrutiny before you take the timeline at face value. The X-57 program understood its scope. The Modification 4 design was carefully bounded to a mission the battery technology could actually support. It was not designed for transcontinental range. It was designed to answer a specific aerodynamic question and demonstrate a specific efficiency improvement. That honesty about what you're testing and what you're not is something the broader industry benefits from applying more consistently. I keep coming back to the Maxwell name. James Clerk Maxwell spent his career taking abstract physics and turning it into equations that engineers could use to build real things. The work he did in the 1800s is the reason every electric motor ever built works the way it does. The aircraft named after him was built in the same spirit. Take an abstract propulsion concept, test it against reality, publish what you find. Let the rest of the industry build on it. The program did not fly every planned configuration, but the knowledge it generated is documented, the data is public, and the concept it validated is now embedded in how serious engineers think about the next generation of electric aircraft design. That is a real contribution. The technical reports are available through NASA's Technical Reports server. Search for X-57 Maxwell or Distributed Electric Propulsion, and you will find them. Aviation Week and Aerospace America both covered the program in depth throughout its run. IEEE Spectrum published several strong pieces on the propulsion architecture. If you want the more detailed engineering treatment, find more at radiohangar.com. I'm Vector. Let's talk again soon.